For what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. U.S. FBI Chief James Comey told a Senate panel that he agonized over disclosing his agency is looking into further information into Democrat Hillary Clinton's use of private email server after investigators cleared her of wrongdoing.
Look, this was terrible. It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election. But honestly, it wouldn't change the decision. Everybody who disagrees with me has to come back to October 28th with me and stare at this and tell me what you would do. Would you speak or would you conceal? And I could be wrong, but we honestly made a decision between those two choices that even in hindsight, and this has been one of the world's most painful experiences, I would make the same decision. I would not conceal that on October 28th from the Congress.
The FBI normally tries not to disclose investigations of candidates shortly before an election, so it won't affect the outcome. On Tuesday, Hillary Clinton partly blamed her loss on Comey's announcement.
It wasn't a perfect campaign. There is no such thing. But I was on the way to winning until the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off.
Clinton said she would offer more details and analysis of her electoral defeat in a book she is publishing this fall. The United States is bringing its Southeast Asian allies on board to tackle a top national security priority for the U.S., North Korea's nuclear proliferation and missile threats. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson hosting foreign ministers from ASEAN on Thursday at the State Department. This is VOA News. President Trump says he'll do whatever is necessary to reach a Middle East peace agreement, and he believes there's a very good chance of bringing Israel and the Palestinians together.
I'm committed to working with Israel and the Palestinians to reach an agreement. But any agreement cannot be imposed by the United States or by any other nation. The Palestinians and Israelis must work together to reach an agreement that allows both peoples to live, worship, and thrive and prosper in peace.
Trump's comment followed a meeting with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas in the Oval Office, and the president said he'd love to be a mediator or a facilitator between the two sides. Speaking through an interpreter, Abbas said, "We are coming into a new horizon that would enable us to bring about peace." The U.S. House of Representatives is expected to vote Thursday to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, the health care law that is commonly known as Obamacare. The Republican leader in the House told reporters late Wednesday he believes they have enough votes to pass the bill. The White House is hoping the president's meeting with influential lawmakers on Wednesday will help convince some of the undecided moderates to vote in favor of that bill. French presidential candidates Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron faced off in a scathing 2-hour televised debate Wednesday, just days before they face each other in a runoff election. Le Pen portrayed her opponent as being weak on terrorism, while Macron called his opponent a dangerous extremist. An opinion polling average shows Macron still has a double-digit percentage lead over Le Pen heading into next week's runoff election. Iranian state media says an explosion ripped through a coal mine in northern Iran on Wednesday, killing at least 21 miners and injuring many more. An emergency official said at one point as many as 14 people were believed to be still trapped in the mine. So far, no word on the cause of that blast. The Islamic State group is claiming responsibility for a suicide bombing in Kabul earlier Wednesday that killed at least 8 people and wounded 25 more. A spokesman for the U.S.-led NATO coalition confirm one of its armored vehicles was targeted in the attack that injured 3 service members. Witnesses said most of the victims were Afghan civilians. Once again, recapping some of our top stories at this hour, the House of Representatives here in the U.S. expected to vote on the Affordable Care Act, their version of it, tomorrow here in Washington. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari was again a no-show at Wednesday's Federal Executive Council meeting.
We've always endeavored to tell the truth about what is wrong with our president. What more do they want us to say? We appreciate their concern and want to assure that we'll do what is right, not just for the president, but for the country.
Lai Mohammed is Nigeria's Minister of Information and Culture. Meanwhile, an official of the opposition PDP says the president's advisors need to be more transparent with the public. Alleged victims of former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh seek justice, and Swaziland workers approved the demands for improved living conditions.
The demands that to Tukoswa, the various political parties have been putting forward are simple demands. A demand of a fair share of the economy.
Wandile Drudlu is the national coordinator for the Swaziland United Democratic Front. South Sudan's government denies it has banned Al Jazeera English staff from working in the country, and a new pill might someday help conquer midlife obesity. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari was again a no-show at Wednesday's Federal Executive Council meeting, raising more speculations about the president's health. Instead, the meeting was chaired by Vice President Yemi Osinbajo. The president missed two cabinet meetings last month and last Friday prayers. He also failed to attend his grandson's wedding on Saturday. Voices are getting louder for the 74-year-old Mr. Buhari to take a medical leave because of his ailing health. Minister of Information and Culture, Lai Mohammed, says the president missed Wednesday's cabinet meeting because his doctors advised him to take a rest. He said the president was in the office on Tuesday and had meetings with the Attorney General and other officials. Mohammed said suggestions that the president has been bedridden because of his deteriorating health are false.
Well, you see, Mr. President never hid his condition. When he came back from the UK, he told the whole world that he has never been that sick in his life and that it will take time for him to recover and that he's going to need a lot of rest and he will go back to the UK for further treatment. So whatever is happening now is exactly what he has told us will happen.
Let me say that Nigerians are sympathetic towards the health of the president, but there are some Nigerians who are saying that those of you around the president have not been transparent.
Well, it depends on what does transparency mean.
That you have not said the truth in terms of what really happened with the president.
We have always endeavored to tell the truth about what is wrong with our president. What more do they want us to say?
So what do you say to people who say the president should at least take a medical leave? What do you say to them?
You see, we have taken all advice on board. We appreciate their concern. I want to assure that I will do what is right, not just for the president, but for the country.
There was a report, I think former President Olusegun Obasanjo and other former military rulers, they have had a meeting. What do you suppose they were meeting about?
I wouldn't know, frankly speaking.
So what's next? Is the president going to leave to go for further treatment?
I think the next few days, you know, we'll decide. But I can assure you, nobody can love Mr. President more than he loves himself. And therefore, if it is necessary for him to go and seek treatment abroad, he will simply do so.
Is the president able to move? If you were to describe for the Nigerian people, what do you think is his condition?
When the president was in the office yesterday, he did receive people, and it was widely reported that he took reports from the Attorney General and also the Group Managing Director of the NNPC, his office. So all these stories about him being bedridden, cannot eat, I think they are just stories.
When do you think the people can see the president again in his public duty?
Very soon. We all pray for him to rest, recover, and, you know, be in the office as soon as possible.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's Minister of Information and Culture. He was speaking with me from Abuja. An official of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, says that President Muhammadu Buhari's advisors need to be more transparent about the state of the president's health. Abdullahi Jallo, advisor to PDP National Caretaker Chairman Senator Ahmed Mohamed McCarthy, says all Nigerians are praying for the president's good health. But he says many Nigerians, including the opposition, are concerned about the manner in which the president's advisors are not being open with the public. Jallo says the experience of former President Umaru Yar'Adua requires that the government to be more open to the people about the health of their president.
As Nigerians, nobody will pray bad evil to his president, because if you do that, you are praying bad to yourself. We are praying the president to recover from his illness, but there is a need for the government, not the way how they are making propaganda as regards to the issue. Let the government be very sincere and cohesive to tell Nigerians the truth. Certainly, nobody is comfortable that the president, since when he came back from the medical checkup, has been battling with one thing or the other as regards to his health, which all Nigerians are praying for him to be healthy. But the way and manner the government in power, particularly the spokesmen, are making it to be so political instead of being realistic, that gives a lot of concerns to Nigerians, including the opposition.
Information Minister Lai Mohammed said that the president did not attend the cabinet meeting because he took the day to rest.
The issue is beyond that. I sincerely believe his wife, Aisha, has spoken that the health of the president is not so bad as people perceive it, which we Nigerians, including the opposition party, we are praying for him to get healthy recovery within time. But there are a lot of conflicting statements for and against. You will hear maybe one of his aides is saying one thing and the other person is the minister of immigration is saying one thing. All what Nigerians need is the Western world, where this kind of thing is happening, the developed world, i.e. America. A clear position will be said that this is the picture, and then the person capable of saying it will say it with authority, with facts that will convince people. All the same, we as opposition party, the PDP, we are praying for the president to be healthy. You know, it's a human nature that God bestows on a human being. No matter whatever you do to hide it, it will not be hidden. Sometimes darkness must come to light. We only sincerely, as opposition party, pray the president to recover in good time and in good health so that he can be attending his office to assist Nigerians based on the mandate given to him.
The former founding chairman of the APC said the other day that he thought the same way, but he thought also that the lack of transparency was leading people to...
Well, the Patrick, Mr. Chip Akande, the former national chairman of APC, has made his mind known to Nigeria. Don't forget, we have had a bad experience of Umar Yar'Adua. It is the government that needs to be sincere. As far as we Nigerians know, Buhari is very sincere in what he is doing. If it may amount for the president to go back for medical check-up, which by God's grace, inshallah, he will recover fully, so be it. But where you now assume to say he is in the house, and it is not a medical doctor that is making this comment. It's a politician who sometimes some of his words may be doubtful. Nigerian may hardly believe that.
Abdullahi Jallo is advisor to the National Caretaker Chairman of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. You are speaking with me from Kaduna. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 4th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. after last week's verdict that upheld former Chadian president Hissène Habré's convictions for crimes against humanity and more. Other alleged victims of injustices under African presidents have renewed hope in prosecuting former presidents for alleged crimes. Victims of Habré's regime met with a newly formed committee in Gambia recently to discuss how they can seek justice against former President Yahya Jammeh. American lawyer Reed Brody, who worked with Habré's victims for nearly two decades and was instrumental in the conviction, talks to Ricky Stryak about the long but hopeful road ahead for Gambians seeking justice.
Most people, everybody, said that, you know, we were never going to get to court, that we didn't understand how the system works, that there was a trade union of heads of state. And I think as much as anything, a motivation in all of this for me was to show that you can do it with tenacity, with perseverance, when you don't give up. Victims can actually create the political conditions to bring their dictator to justice, even in Africa with the support of the African Union.
Since this verdict was upheld, especially, there have been people talking about how this could be inspiration for other countries. And you recently went to Gambia and spoke to alleged victims of Jammeh's regime. There would be a lot of obstacles to going after former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh. What are those maybe obstacles might be?
Well, yeah, I mean, every case, of course, is different. And the key is in each of these cases to create the political conditions. And in the case of Yahya Jammeh, I think what is going to be particularly difficult is that he, unlike Hissène Habré, who went to Senegal, which is a democratic country, Yahya Jammeh has chosen, you know, probably the most entrenched kleptocratic dictatorship in that part of the world, Equatorial Guinea under Obiang. And I think if the Habré case shows us anything, it's that with tenacity, with persistence.
You guys were almost innovative, really.
Thank you. I think, you know, with innovation and imagination, you can find those levers. And by putting the victim stories first, by not making it a North-South geopolitical battle, it was very gratifying for the Chadians to meet the Gambians. So we had a very exciting meeting.
When you and some of the Chadians went to Banjul, I understand that you met with Fatoumata Sandeng, Solo Sandeng's daughter. She is obviously just one of many victims. She's a family member of a victim. Can you tell me a little bit about her and how she relates to the rest of the victims, or, you know, what you learned about what you guys would actually be seeking justice for?
The interesting thing in the Gambia is I think that the oppression in the Gambia was somewhat more selective than it was under Hissène Habré. Rather than, you know, entire ethnic groups who were being attacked under Jammeh, you had political opponents like Solo Sandeng, Fatoumata's father. You had, you know, students, the April 10 and 11 students who were killed. You had journalists like the father of Baba Haidara, who was there at the meeting. You had, at our meeting, you had Fatoumata Jawara, a newly elected National Assembly member, who was arrested together with Solo Sandeng and who was violated during her captivity.
That was Reed Brody, American lawyer and member of the International Commission of Jurists. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from New York. Workers in Swaziland have unanimously approved a 16-point demand to present to the government in Mbabane seeking improved living conditions and pay. They expressed concern that the government has yet to meet previous demands despite repeated appeals. Wandile Dludlu is national coordinator for a pro-democracy group known as the Swaziland United Democratic Front. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that the refusal of the government to address workers' concerns underscores the demands for immediate democratic reforms in the Southern African Kingdom.
Workers in Swaziland have resolved to put at least a list of about 16 demands to government, which very soon they will be working on the logistics on how to push or pressure the Swazi government to concede on their demands.
But do you think the government will consider this push, because issues of not enough funds have been raised by the government and that the government does not necessarily have the money to meet such demands?
Yes, exactly. That's the basis and the rationale behind the 16 demands. That on one hand, His Majesty's government is calling for savings, tightening of belts across the board, and particularly persuading workers not to expect salary increments, not to expect provision of better working conditions. While on the other hand, the very same government is the one that is buying the King's Jet, which is coming by the end of this year, which is in hundreds of millions of US dollars. You have the same government doing royal projects in the likes of a multi-billion hotel in preparation for the 2020 AU Swaziland will be hosting.
Wandile, I see a possible political clash between the workers' demand and the stance of the government. Do you foresee the government yielding any grounds at all? Because previous demands by workers have yet to be met by the administration in Mbabane.
Definitely, you are quite correct, my brother, in making that observation that definitely, most likely, government will not concede to these basic and necessary demands that would are being pursued by workers. This then takes us to the fundamental question of a government that is responsive to the needs of the people. As you know, Swaziland is going to election next year. The demand for a people's government is becoming central. For instance, the South United Democratic Front, which worked quite closely with Tukoso, this year is taking head on the call for a people's government so that we stop these piecemeal fights. We put all our energy and resources and time and focus on one demand.
Wandile, your demands of a people-centered government is sharply against supporters of the government who say some of you are using these workers' demands to score cheap political points to undermine the king as well as his government, and that you are creating disaffection and undermining the unity in the country. Your take?
Definitely, we have heard those responses on the part of the government. Our take on that one is very simple. The demands that Tukoswa, the various political parties have been putting forward are simple demands, a demand of a fair share of the economy. How peaceful Swaziland is going to be will only be determined by one thing. How fair are we in distributing the little resources that we have as a country? The biggest problem currently in Swaziland, that is actually the biggest threat to the peace and the prosperity of this nation, is the gullible appetite of His Majesty and those close to him who are abusing day in and day out the resources of our people by pursuing projects that have nothing to do with the core needs of the people.
Wandile Dridru is the national coordinator for the Swaziland United Democratic Front. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Mbabane. South Sudan's government has denied it has banned all Al Jazeera English staff from working in the country. Presidential spokesman Atain Wek Atain says Al Jazeera was suspended and not banned because the group has an issue with the country's media authority.
The truth is that the media authority, which is the regulatory body of the media houses and the journalists in the country, has some conditions that the Jazeera English has not met in order for the Jazeera English to base in South Sudan. There are a number of times that the Jazeera English supporters, you know, in Juba, have been traveling to rebel areas and report about rebels, when in actual fact they have not taken permission so that, you know, they are escorted. So even the country is even fearing that, you know, they might be running into a wrong element, and their safety can be even in jeopardy. And then later on, the government of South Sudan is blamed for not protecting the journalists from harm. So these are some of the things that the media authorities saw it necessary for Jazeera English to address these issues. So it is like they are not expelled from the country, but they are suspended.
The journalists want to go out to cover something, why do they need the permission? That's their own security.
No. This is not how it happens. You know, the country has a number of pockets of rebellions. And so by journalists going to the areas that are not necessarily under the government control or not the government areas, then that's a high risk. And when a journalist runs into any danger, or if he got killed by an element that are against the government, then the government is to be blamed later on and says that, you know, the insecurity in the country has gone to the extent that of government not being able to protect the journalists in the country. So this is very important. In any country in the world, there are regulatory measures that a government can put in place to ensure the safety of everyone. So this is about safety.
So this has nothing to do with, say, a report that was given from the front lines of the fighting accusing your government of some killings?
No, actually, if they go to the front line and then they report a balanced story, there's no other problems. Any journalist in this country is writing about government and is writing about rebel at one time and at one point. But if this is the case that the government of South Sudan or the media authority has used, many journalists would have left the country. But Jazeera English has been rampant in doing this of late. So the regulatory body, which is operating by law, you know, the media authority, asked the Jazeera English to respond to certain conditions, which the Jazeera English has not met, and so they were suspended.
Your government in general, South Sudan in general, has not fared well in the recent World Press Freedom Report. The report on your government and its dealing with the media doesn't seem to be very good.
No. You know, if there is any country that is to be applauded for being good to journalists, it's South Sudan, if at all. And unless someone has something different in his mind or her mind. The government of South Sudan is the only government that has been polarized media houses that try to portray the government as the culprit. They do so when in actual fact they have not troubled to verify certain information, but yet they have been allowed to stay in the country. So that South Sudan, unless those who have a plan to see South Sudan being portrayed in that kind of image, are the ones that will say that South Sudan is not a better place for journalists. But I think it's a better place for journalists because we are democracy and we cherish and respect the freedom of speech.
Atain Wekatain is a spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. As they get older, most people tend to pack on weight, but it's not their fault, according to scientists who have discovered a biological mechanism that causes people's waistlines to expand in middle age. Views Jessica Berman reports.
It's what scientists call the middle age paradox. As people age, they usually gain a significant amount of weight, even though they tend to eat less. Endocrinologist Jay Chung says the average weight gain is 13 kilos or more between the ages of 20 and 50. Chung heads the Laboratory of Obesity and Aging at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health near Washington.
Our society attributes middle-age weight gain, lack of exercise, to lifestyle choices and lack of willpower and discipline. But what our study shows is that there is actually a genetic program that makes us the way we are in middle age.
Chung led a team of scientists that discovered the role of an enzyme called DNA PK in middle age spread. He says it becomes overactive as we age.
It's like trying to accelerate with a foot on a brake. And what it does is it prevents fat release from our belly, and it prevents fat burning by our tissues like skeletal muscle.
Chung explains that overactive DNA PK causes people to gradually lose a tiny structure inside their cells called mitochondria, which act as powerhouses to fuel the body at the same time burning fat.
That's VOA's Jessica Berman reporting. And that's it for this Thursday, May 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Klotik and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, Trade Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the future of sub-Saharan Africa's development lies in the hands of its youth. In her new book, Ambassador Robin Renee Sanders says growth and progress is being driven by small and medium-sized enterprises. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.